Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, hey, everybody. Happy Thursday. This is Mecca. And I'm just happy to be here to start off our month of October. Now, everybody knows we definitely discuss topics that are near and dear to our heart. And, you know, sometimes, hey sis, oftentimes those topics are, you know, those kind of topics that are kind of touchy, you know, very, very sensitive. So we're back on that tonight. We gave you guys a good break, and we're back on that. So October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. So, you know, Unique and I just want to give a shout out to everybody who is a survivor. You know, we thank God that you are a survivor. People who are in, who have agencies that support people trying to get out of domestic violence. The men who go through domestic violence and suffer in silence, probably more silence than the females, because it's embarrassing to admit that, you know, they're being abused by a female. The women who are also suffering in silence as well. Our prayers are going out to you. We hope that this show is an inspiration to you. We hope that as you begin to learn about more survivors, that you believe that you too can and will someday be a survivor. So we just wanted to give that little greeting out to you first and foremost, and just let you know that you know that you are a survivor. And even though you're going through what it is that you're going through right now, that this is not the end, that you can make it. You can make it, and that you will make it. So we hope, again, that this is an encouragement. And sis, I see that you're here. I know that you want to weigh in and talk to the people a little bit as well, you know, and give them your shout out as well. So, hey sis, hey Unique, how are you?
I am good. Blessed and highly
good,
favored.
Good. Awesome. Go ahead.
I actually wanted to elaborate on it because you have people that are in situations to where they stay because they're not physically being abused, but it can be verbally.
Exactly.
It can be, you know, so many different types of unhealthy.
Financially.
Financially.
Emotionally.
Depending on somebody.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's really deep. I remember being a young girl, early teenage years, and one of my best friends at the time, she was with a guy that was maybe 2 or 3 years older than her, and he would, like, beat her up. I mean, just for silly, stupid things. I mean, crazy things. And I remember one time we was watching videos, and I think we were saying how cute somebody from New Edition or something, whoever it was, and he was at her door, and he was listening, and he heard the conversation that we was having. It wasn't anything crazy or anything. And the next day, when I seen her, he had beat her up because of that conversation. I mean, it was so bad to where we would go to the store, she would have to show him receipts so that he can, you know, make sure that she was really what she said she was. Within, because he'll be like, okay, it takes you this amount of time to get back home. So what were you doing in those 5 minutes? I mean, it was like really, really, really insane. And it was several times that I, you know, jumped in to defend her. But it's like when you're young, you really can't deal with that. You don't have a mental capacity to deal with that. But they're still together all these years later. Like, 20, going on 30 years later, they're still together. And it's just something. And I remember saying, I don't never want to go through that, just because I saw her go through that. No one will ever have that amount of control over me. So it's just something. It's really something. And I just pray for anybody that's going through that. You have to have a strong support system around you. You are faced with those situations. But
no.
And every time I would listen to the Eve song,
every time I would listen to Love is Blind by Eve, it would always make
mm-hmm.
me think of her, of that. Yeah, I remember those days. That was crazy. Wow. Yeah, that really was really, really crazy. And then, you know, it's just crazy how, you know, usually the person who's doing the abusing, you know, how they break down your whole psyche and your emotions, you know, and then you just feel like you have nothing. This is what, you know, I've been told in those situations. That, you know, you just get so broken down. And then it's the whole thing of, you know, being alienated from people who really, really love you and people who have your back and have your best interests at heart. So then when you go to reach out, you don't have that support system, because it's just like, oh, well, you know, you didn't want to be around me then. So now, you know, why would you want to be around me now? So you just don't even have anybody. And it makes it really, really difficult. You know, but I always believe that situations can be difficult, but it doesn't mean that they're impossible to get out of. And I know I definitely wrote a quote about that. You know, just because something is difficult doesn't mean it's impossible. And, you know, just today I had to go back, and I just posted it on my Instagram at Miss Mecca, but I just posted a quote that just came out of the blue over the summer. I wasn't even thinking about domestic violence in any way, shape, form, or fashion. But I just shared the quote, and I'm paraphrasing because, guys, I never remember my quotes unless I'm looking at it. But it said, black and blue belongs in a Crayola box, not your face. You know, so hi, Ma. So I think I quoted it right, y'all. But, you know, but it's so true. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then it's the whole, you know, they go through the embarrassment. And, you know, then you got to cover up and, you know, and kind of pretend and lie to people and say this is what happened to you when you really, you know, being abused. And most of the time, you know, when you are being abused, like I said, it first started with the emotional thing. You know, it usually starts there. And then you have some people that say, well, you know, I've never been hit. Or, you know, for an example, like Trey said, she barely ever was physical, but broke down to the lowest point of broken down that you can be emotionally. And that, you know, that's a humongous wear and tear. You know,
that can be worse sometimes,
yes.
Because scars, it heal, but when you're emotionally, like, drained,
it plays a part
of
your mind,
nothing,
your psyche.
Yes, it does.
Yes,
and you really start to believe
absolutely.
The things that these people are saying to you.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. So, sis, I
but
am
you know
going
what?
To.
You know something that I always think of. It always comes to me, like, what did that person see? Did they see their mom being abused? You know, were they abused by, you know, someone as a child? Because that's
right.
That's to me, that's learned behavior. That's just not normal.
And you know
normal.
What? I thought about that. I'm glad that you touched on it. I'm gonna save my point, and I'm gonna intro us really quickly, and also play Love is Blind by Eve. But I'm definitely going to come back to your point because, yeah, I thought about that as well. So without further ado, everybody, once again, welcome to the VIP. And we're just going to do what we normally do at this time. You know, that ain't really my line.
Yeah,
but,
yeah. Lie. I'll be stealing my line.
But when I don't steal it, you say, I'll put it on the spot, y'all.
I'm gonna learn how to wrap it. I'm going to learn how to put it in and flow it.
That is hilarious. Do it, boo. I ain't mad at you.
Thank you for joining the VIP with Unique and Mecca, two urban, compassionate, and sassy hosts who believe that everyone is a VIP through trial and triumph. Before we get started, we like to share the house rules. Please respect the views and opinions of others, even if you don't agree. Please avoid tea spilling on the pink carpet, as we want to keep our VIP area litter-free of judgment toward one another. And finally, please have fun and be inspired. Let's get it started.
Okay, everybody. Eve, Love is Blind.
Yeah.
Yo, I don't even know you and I hate you. See, all I know is that my girlfriend used to date you. How would you feel if she held you down and raped you? Tried and tried, but she never could escape you. She was in love, and I'd ask you how. I mean, why? What kind of love from a nigga would black your eye? What kind of love from a nigga every night make you cry? What kind of love from a nigga make you wish he would die? I mean, shit, he bought you things and gave you diamond rings, but some things wasn't worth none of the pain that he brings. And you say, what made you fall for him? That nigga had the power to make you crawl for him. I thought you was a doctor, be on call for him. Smack you down, cause he said you was too tall for him. That wasn't love, baby girl, you was dreaming. I could've killed you when you said your seed was growing from the
seed. Love is blind, and it'll take over your mind. What you think is love is truly not. You need to elevate and find.
Love is blind,
and it'll take over your mind. What you think is love is truly not. You need to elevate and find.
I don't even know you when I kill you myself. You played with her like a doll and put her back on the shelf. Wouldn't let her go to school and better herself. She had a baby by your ass and you ain't giving no help, Big time hustler, snake motherfucker. One's born every day and every day she was your sucker. How could you beat the mother of your kid? How could you tell her that you love her? Don't give a fuck if she lives. She told me she would leave you. I admit it, she did. But came back, made up a lie about you missing your kids. Sweet kisses, baby, ain't even know she was your mistress. Had to deal with fist fights and phone calls from your bitches. Lost like you possessed her, telling me to mind my business. That it was her life and stay the fuck out of it. I tried and said just for him, I keep it ready clip.
Love is blind, and it'll take over your mind. What you think is love is truly not. You need to elevate and find.
Love is blind,
and it'll take over your mind. What you think is love is truly not. You need to elevate and find.
I don't even know you and I want you dead. Don't know the facts, but I saw the blood pour from her head. See, I lay down beside her in the hospital bed, and about 2 hours later, doctor said she was dead. Had the nerve to show up at her mother's house the next day to come and pay your respect to help the family pray. Even knelt down on one knee and let a tear drop. And before you had a chance to get up, you heard my gun cop praying to me now. I ain't God, but I pretend. I ain't start your life a nigga, I'ma bring it to an end. And I did, clear shots and no regrets. Never cops come and lock me under the jail. Nigga, whatever, my bitch, fuck that, my sister. You can never figure out, even if I let you live, what our love was all about. I consider her my blood and it ain't come no thicker.
Love is blind, and it'll take over your mind. Take over your mind.
time I hear that song, this, I'm telling you, all I can think of is verse 2. I know Eve had such stuff out there. The God always verse 2. You know, me and my...
I can't hear you.
But
talking to the phone.
And that, you know, every time that I hear that song, you know, verse 2, I'm always like, man, listen. Now,
mm-hmm.
Ooh, you know.
That's the first time I've ever heard the song without faith.
Oh, okay.
I got the wrong one. Hello?
Because we know that in doing so, you're definitely helping someone else. So that's, you know, that's a huge blessing, and we just thank you for being brave enough to do so and being on the show, on a VIP. So, yeah. But, you know, as I was saying, and like I said, I'm going to open that line for Erica in a minute. This is a very heavy topic, and it needs to be taken seriously. And, you know, I just want to say to people out there, you know, that are from the outside looking in, just please try not to be judgmental, because you never know what you might do in a situation like that or how people get into these particular situations. So even if we have callers who want to call in, I'm just saying it right now that, you know, if we are able to open the line, because, you know, we don't always have the time to, but if we are, you know, this is not the place where you want to call and be judgmental. You know, if you don't have something nice to say, like most of our mamas used to say, you know, just don't say it at all. If you didn't come to encourage, then, you know, this is not the platform for you. So I just wanted to put that out there. But without further ado, I want to introduce to everyone tonight, Miss Erica Havel. Thank you so much for being here tonight.
Thank you for having me.
We are so
honored
to have you, Erica.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here. When Monique told me that, she DM'd me and she said, you know any domestic violence survivors? And I said, yep, me. I can talk to you guys about that all day. But thank you so much for having me here.
Wow. And you know, it's funny because I never do that. That was just like totally out of the blue for me, you know, to reach out to someone who, of course, I knew a little something about, you know, because we follow each other on Instagram, and I would see some of your quotes, and I'd be like, wow, she's cool, you know, she's really cool. I need to connect with her. But, you know, it's very rare that, you know, that I'll reach out and ask someone a question like that, because, I mean, how did I know? I didn't. So I knew that, you know, that it was meant to be. So we definitely want to get into allowing you the opportunity to share your story. If there's something that you don't want to talk about, you know, if there's a question that we ask and it's just a little bit too delicate, hey, listen, we skip and go on to the next thing. That's fine, too. So just, Erica, just give us a synopsis of, you know, what your story was, because everybody's story is the same, but then it's different as well. So what was it, you know, like for you dealing with living a life of domestic violence?
I would like to read, today is a perfect day, you know, to talk about this, just simply because I was actually, you know, working on this chapter in my book. And it talks about, like, strength. And today was one of the days that I actually opened up, you know, the way that I did to where I finally faced that this was my life and this is what I dealt with. And a lot of domestic violence victims, they don't realize that they think because their teeth haven't gotten knocked out that they're not dealing with domestic violence. You know, I've dealt with the physical, I've dealt with the emotional, I've dealt with the mental, all of it, you know, to the point to where it almost made me, you know, hate myself. And like I heard you say at the beginning, like, don't be judgmental. You hide a lot of this because you are afraid of what people may say, you know, call you stupid because they don't understand. And they say, well, she's stupid because she stayed in it. Or you still love this person and you don't want your family to hate them for what they're doing, so you keep it a secret. Or you're afraid, you know, that people won't believe it. You know, there were times where I used to wish that I had cameras in my house because, you know, to the community and to my family and his family, he was a model person. You know, he was always the one who helped people pay their bills and get out of situations. But to me, he was horrible. And so, you know, I used to wish that there were cameras in my house so people would see. But I want to know if it's okay, you know, for me to read this this one part in the book that I wrote today.
Yes.
Sure you can.
The floor is yours.
So it starts off to say, it starts off where when I was younger, I was prophesied to and told that I was going to have a lot of lonely nights in my life. And I was upset at this missionary for telling me that, and I didn't understand. But this is where I wanted to start. It's needless to say that I didn't leave that revival feeling great. I can't remember whether or not, you know, she told me why that this would be my life. But I can count on my fingers and my toes the amount of times that I've had to cry myself to sleep. And I actually would need the toes of 10 times 10 people the amount of times, you know, that I sung a song in the kitchen while I cooked dinner for my kids, you know, through tears running down my face trying to encourage myself.
Mm-hmm.
Or the umpteenth time that I woke up in the middle of the night with heartbreak after my ex-husband has called me and called me a bitter, lonely bitch. During a brawl earlier in the week, or sometimes even hours before, you know, waking up in the middle of the night thinking, why did God choose me for this? Why did I have to be the one to get spit on? Called hope, thrown off the front porch. Why was I the one who had to have my head mugged or my hair pulled or my wrist squeezed so hard that it cut off my circulation? Why did I have to be cheated on repeatedly or lied to, neglected, and poorly mistreated? I told myself that I must have done something wrong, something bad in another lifetime for this to be what God intended for me. I started to get angry. My face started to slip, and drastically I saw the numerous of times that I would give my last dime to help another person, only to be mistreated the following week or sometimes the next day. And so then I talk about the other things that go on in my life, like as far as my job. I know we talk about, like, domestic violence, but I want to skip over that part. But after praying and asking God for peace and help, I only sunk deeper and deeper into pain, deeper and deeper into darkness, watching other people around me happy. All I could do was learn how to breathe through it all. All I could do was breathe and encourage myself, even when everything in front of me told me that my life was worthless. I was struggling not to hate myself, not to give up on life, but I didn't give up. I didn't hate myself. Even with all of that, I knew that my help still came from God. I knew that the joy of the Lord was my strength. That's it, right there, my strength. Where did that strength come from that allowed me to endure the heat and the heaviness of all of that? How did I find the energy to motivate those around me when I felt like I didn't even want to go on? He was building me. He was building my strength for this. You're reading this book today because that was my training. I know that I have to bring in the scripture right now, Genesis 50 and 20. As for you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring it about that many people should be kept alive as they are today. I got to laugh now that I say my eyes are open because the devil meant that for my bad, but God meant it for my good. All those nights the devil wanted to kill. All those nights the devil wanted me to kill myself. He wanted me to kill my self-esteem. He called me out of my name for years to ensure that I believed that that's who I was. Even as a child, he talked harsh words to me. This is his world. So everything in front of him, everything in front of me belonged to him. All of those lies, the hatred, the backbiting, the lie that I was alone at night, even though God was there with me, all alone, helping me learn to breathe. Like Job and his wife, God knew what the outcome would be, even though I couldn't see it, even though I lost faith and I questioned whether God even loved me. God knew what my job was on this earth. He knew what I needed to speak. He knew that I needed to speak to millions of women and help them through their stories, through their times. He knew the training that I needed to go through to get promoted over and over in his organization. I was in training camp, and it was hard. It was hard, but I made it, and I'm here today because the silence wasn't really silence. The silence is louder than ever now. I'm here to say that I do see it now, that God meant it for my good. And, you know, through those, that there were times where I wanted to just die. Like, I didn't understand why God created me to get beat up on. You know, even when I left out of my my marriage, the night that I decided that it was, let me give you a little history about myself. My dad was a preacher, so
PK.
Growing up, we were taught divorce was wrong, and when all the abuse started happening, I battled with, what am I supposed to do? Because this is my husband. They say the only reason why you're supposed to get divorced is for if he commits adultery. So I didn't have any proof of him committing adultery, and I just didn't know what to do. So I endured it, and I kept going through it. Every other day, I was a bitch in front of my kids, or getting spit on, or being neglected, or just horrible. Like being told that I was ugly. That another woman was prettier than me, like in my face, like, you know, calling me buck tooth, like just anything, just, you know, ripping my self-esteem apart. The day that I decided that, you know, I didn't care whether the church felt that I should get divorced or not. I had enough. I had gotten up to get the kids ready for school, my two older kids. My son was 7. My daughter was 6. My baby girl was 3, and then I had just had a newborn. And I was getting everybody ready, getting ready to go to work, and a fight had broke out. Somehow, I don't even remember why he was mad, but he was. And the fight broke out, and I was on the ground. This time, he had involved the kids, you know, and I was on the ground, and all I could see, you know, he was cutting off my circulation. And I remember my son jumping on his dad's back, beating him, trying to get him off of me. And my daughter is walking around screaming, let her hair go, let her hair go. And I see my babies trying to defend me. And that was it. I finally got my courage.
Breaking point.
To say, you know what? I'm sorry?
No, I said that was the breaking point. It's like it's one thing for you to abuse me, but for my children to be witnessing it, it's like as a mother, I'm sorry. That just touched home because I have, you know, I have 3 children, and I have a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old, and I just cannot imagine that. I just can't imagine that, and I'm just, oh, my God, Lord have mercy.
That was my breaking point, and he was calling me a bitch, and I looked at my son, and I said, don't you ever say that word, and he looked at him, and he said, don't listen to your mama. He said, if a woman act like a bitch, you better treat her like a bitch, to my 7-year-old son. And I changed the locks that day. And the crazy thing about it is that even though I changed the locks, the abuse didn't stop. It didn't stop. You know, the court granted him half custody, to where he got to see them like every other weekend. And there would be times where he would keep them and I wouldn't be able to get them back. So I'll have to go over there, you know, with the police to try to get them back. Or if I went over there to pick them up, he would start a fight. Even him and his girlfriend would, like, jump on me. Like, he knocked me off the porch one time. Like, I mean, it was crazy. But I had to realize that even though put him out of the house, I had to remove him completely, or else they would continue to see that.
Yeah.
So I battled with that. I battled with that a lot because people kept saying, well, that's their dad. Their relationship has nothing to do with what's going on with y'all. And I battled with that because I care a lot mm-hmm. about my children. And
you don't,
I don't
want your children
ever want them.
That.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
exactly. And I didn't know what to tell them about their dad. You know, I didn't
the
want
truth.
To formulate that opinion for them. Granted, they're teenagers now, and they have their own opinion of him, and they see.
Mm-hmm.
They've seen over the years
mm-hmm.
how, even, you know, with it all, I've tried to still make sure they have a relationship with him, but they've seen, you know, over the years, that they don't even really want to have anything to do with him. It was crazy. His dad passed away. I had texted you, and I said, hey, let's
yeah,
not
look,
share
yeah.
the, hey, and I got cussed out yesterday because I tried to let the kids be with their family, and he called me back, and I was all kind of selfish bitches and this and that, just simply because I tried to bring the kids over there to let them be with their, you know, their family. They lost their granddad, and I ended up having to call out of work, go back and get my kids. I was like, you know what? We're not going to worry about it. It is what it is, because I've healed. I've moved on. I see, you know, like I said in my book, why God allowed those situations to
mm-hmm.
come in my life. I don't know who I have to talk to tell a woman, you don't deserve that. You know, you may go through things when you're younger. When I was younger, I was I had low self-esteem, very low self-esteem. But we moved past
mm-hmm.
that, and we should be able to move past that the older that we get, and I didn't. I had a void that I wanted to fill. And my husband was the first guy that ever showed me any attention, and I latched on to that. I latched on
mm-hmm.
to that and allowed myself to be mistreated because I felt like I didn't deserve anything else, just simply because I had been bullied in school. But you don't – that when you're younger, that's not your life. That's not who you really are. So you don't have to
mm-hmm.
hold on to that, and you don't have to allow a man, a woman, anybody to play off of that, because, you know, we talk about things that bother us with those that we're in relationships with, and we have to be careful with doing that, because you may be in a relationship with somebody who's going to take that and use it against you and use it to
yep.
keep you there. They're going to feed off of that and use it to control you, so you got to be careful with what you share with people, especially if they're not your husband, because he wasn't my husband when I was sharing all that with him, and I didn't know that he was going to use it to, and you know, to trap me and abuse me. But it's, you just have to be able to know that you are someone special, and realize that it is the trick of the devil. It is his job to make you believe that you're not worth anything, to make you forget who you are in God, so that you that power that you have to help the next woman not get into this situation. He doesn't want you to be able
mm-hmm.
to use that power. And
wow, right.
So I just thank God that I know who I am now. I thank God that I'm finally free from that. And I can actually call him what he is. Like, I've never been able to tell him that he was an abuser. I've never been able to say that because, again, he is my kid's father, and I was like, you know, I know his sister and his mom and them. But I can now say, you are an abuser. You have no business around me. You have no business calling me. You are an abuser. And I can tell him and call him and see him for what he truly
mm-hmm.
is now. And I thank God for that. And I can see the signs in somebody else now, you know. They
mm-hmm.
they even act like they want to disrespect me. They can't even be in my space.
That's right.
I know
that's
right.
Right.
So
wow.
Let me ask
and you know something?
That for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
What were you going to say, Michael?
That's unique. That's unique.
Oh, okay.
So, because I know you don't know the difference between voices.
Right.
It's funny because I came across, and this is Mecca, I came across something that you shared on Instagram today, and it made me begin to think about, you know, how in a lot of situations where there's abuse, you tend to, you know, put yourself on the back burner. for the person that's abusing you. So I, you know, so I just wanted to briefly, I wanted to share for those who may not have seen this on Instagram, I just wanted to share your quote and what you said about it. And it says, the only backseat you should ever take in life is in an Uber. And I, when I saw it, I was just like, wow. You know, I thought about how much of a backseat people take, you know, in relationships, in abusive relationships. And then you went on to say your needs matter, your wants matter. Don't let him, her, or them tell you that you are selfish because you have you are tired of taking ish. Because you're tired of putting yourself on the back burner, those people are selfish and manipulating you into living your life to please them. Those people try to be greedy and steal your life, your shine, your talent. You belong on the freaking center of your life. That is powerful. That one line right there is crazy to me.
I love it.
You drive yourself, you drive yourself to the life you want. Enjoy life. Live full. Drink and be merry and take an Uber on the way. Being that woman. What?
And
I was
that
like, oh my God.
I love that.
I said, wait a
I
minute.
Love
I said, we got to share this today on the VIP because it is so true. And I thank God that you realize who God was in your life and who you are. Because let me tell you something, and I know that I don't have to tell you because I know that you know. I know that you know that your life has purpose, but because of what you've been through, so many other people are going to be able to understand that their life has purpose too.
Yeah.
My goodness.
I talked to a young lady on Instagram. She reached out to me, and she said she felt like that because she had been abused, that she was worthless. Like, she had got away from her abuser. She had started a company doing what she loved, making furniture. And she was like, I want to do something. She's like, I know that, you know, just because I've been through this, that I don't have to be quiet. She's like, I want to do something. And I told her, get out there and talk to other women and tell them what your life is like now. Because just because that was you then doesn't mean that's where you're going to end up. That doesn't mean that that's your destiny. Like the other post, that's your training. You know, that's your, you are in training. Now get out and work. Get out and work now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and on my way home, I was thinking about the scripture with Job, and it kind of hit me like Job and Job. And I was thinking about Job where he, you know, went through that test. And I, you know, I got to say, a lot of people talk about Job's wife and they talk about how, oh, she was the devil's accomplice. But Job's wife went through too. You know, nobody is saying, is thinking about the fact that she lost everything too. She lost those kids that
she
bared. You know, all of them. She went through too. So, yeah, and she may have lost faith and told him to go on ahead and commit suicide because he was in pain. She was watching her husband die, and she felt like God, you know, had left them. He wasn't talking to them at that time. He didn't even say anything to her when she told Job that. He spoke when they told Job to curse God. He spoke up then. God did. But he didn't say anything to his wife because they were both in the test together. And nobody, you know, thinks about that. But when I was on the way home thinking about, you know, just that situation and how God gave back to Job, he said, I gave to him twofold. I gave him double what I took away. And so, you know, just because you were abused and you were torn down, your self-esteem was torn down, your self-worth was torn down, but now that you are out of that situation, now that you know who you are, oh, can you just imagine where God is about to take you now? And, you know, when you speak up and let him use your life, that situation, like how Job let God use that situation to show everybody how, you know, sometimes you go through a test, but yet you come out twice as more than when you went in. Can you imagine, you know, how powerful that young lady can be, you know, now that she owns her own furniture shop? She used to get beat up. She used to get, you know, stepped on, drugs. And now here she is, this powerful owner of a furniture store with stuff in IKEA and you know, in places. So, like, that, I mean, to me, that's powerful to be able to show the world how God takes even just rags and turns them into a beautiful
beautiful gown or a beautiful garment.
Yes, indeed.
And that's what I feel
like
God is doing in my life, you know. And that's why
I posted that post today.
Yeah, like, and he's kind of showed me, like, the word Job and Job. It was like, yes, that, you know, this right here is your training for your job. Your job is your purpose. This is your training
right now.
And that's what say it.
My God. It's funny that you would use Job, because I promise you, when people tell you, you know, say, well, you know, who would you compare yourself to in the Bible? I always say Job. I'm like, I'm a Job all day. I feel like that. You know what I mean? But in being a Job, because I know the story, you understand? I know what the glory is going to be at the end of the day.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's like, okay, take me through the trials, God. You know, as long as I keep my eye on focused on you, I know, you know, what the story is going to end up like for me. You know, and then also having this particular platform to be able to talk to. So in case you didn't know, since you're just meeting Unique and I, a good majority of the VIP we use to have conversations like this, people who have gone through certain things, people who think that they can't make it, you know, and we've gone through some of our own share of things as well, firsthand and secondhand, growing up in certain environments or, you know, just things that we've been through. So, you know, if we didn't go through some of those things, we probably wouldn't have the compassion that we have to want to do a show like this, you know. So it was just a blessing, you know, for you, you know, for you to be on. So this is part of our Job season, and this is part of our job, you know, to do this part. So, you know, it's just a blessing in and of itself. Yeah, definitely. But I'm sorry, sis. I know you had a question before Erica and I were going
to
say something.
But I have several questions. I wanted to go back a little bit further, Erica. I wanted to start, okay, how long were you with him? And I wanted to also ask you, when did the abuse first start?
Sure. We were together for 13 years. I met him right outside of high school. The crazy part about it is when I first met him, he was like, like he didn't even want to be with me. He wanted to be with my friend, and I talk about this in my book as well. His mom told me to come over there, and she was like, oh, he wants to see you. So, and then when I get there, the first thing he goes is, Ma, no, Ma. No. And I was like, oh, my gosh, this woman lied to me and set me up. But I ended up staying there and talking to him, and we ended up, you know, becoming good friends, but like while I telling me how much he likes my friend. And he ended up doing something to where he, you know, they ended up not talking. He found out that she was messing with somebody, and we ended up getting together, ended up getting married. The abuse started, I would say, after I had my third child. He was never really a tentative person, but like I said, I was just happy to be out the game and not have to look again, because my self-esteem was just that bad, and I was just happy to have somebody who wanted to be with me. My dad, the night before my dad passed away, I had been at work. That morning, I was in college during the day. I would go to college from 6 in the morning to 10, and then I would go to work until, like, midnight. I came home, and he had a house full of people, and I just asked him, like, really nice. I said, hey, can you just send everybody home? I said, I'm tired. I said, the kids asleep. And it just, oh, my gosh, it went horrific. His uncles had to basically my life. And I went in there, and I called my dad, and my dad said, baby girl, I need you to be strong. And I said, what are you talking about? And he said, he don't hit you now. He said, but as soon as I'm gone, he's going to start beating you upside your head. And then the phone died. And I said, man, he ain't talking about nothing. Because at that point, he hadn't hit me. It was just like mugging my head or, you know, spitting on me or, you know, stuff like that. And the next day, my dad died. He was killed by a drug driver.
Oh my God.
And I stayed with my mom for two or three days up until the funeral. And the night before the funeral, I told him to come and pick me and the kids up so I could go home and, you know, get us ready for the funeral. And I was sitting in the – he stopped by Burger King so we could get something to eat, and I was crying because I – while I was around my mom, I couldn't really grieve because I had to, you know, be strong for her and help her. And so, like, when I finally got away, you know, I was able to cry. And I'm like, I'm with my husband. I can let out. I can cry. And he turned over and he said, man, somebody need to shut this bitch up. And
what?
I was like, it oh, my gosh, like, tore me up. But I would say probably not even a week after my dad's funeral did the physical abuse start. And that lasted, we stayed married probably, my dad died in 2006, we got divorced in 2011, so we stayed married 5 years, so
five
I went
years.
Through the, 5 years of physical abuse, and 13, I would say maybe 10 of mental and verbal and emotional abuse.
Wow.
So did he drink or have a substance abuse problem?
His dad was an alcoholic, and that's all he saw growing up. But I mean, he smoked weed, and he was a hustler, you know. But he didn't do any hard drugs or anything other than smoking marijuana. But he was a hustler, so I mean, he was around that environment. But he's just angry. He was just an angry person when it came to me. He told my mom that we grew up on two different sides of the train track, and he would always say, you think you're better than me. And I think that it had a lot to do with how I was raised. You know, my family was the family that had Thanksgiving dinner around the table, you know, big Christmases and things like that. And so
he didn't come from
that? I
think
he thought, no, he didn't at all. He came from the south side of Chicago. And their family, I love his family, you know, but it was a different between the way we were raised. You know, they came from Caprine Green, you know, over in like the real low income. Yeah. And like it, even to this day, like I can't even, because he literally thought that I thought I was better than them. And I never thought that. I loved him, you know, and
you wouldn't have
been
with him if he thought you was better than him.
Exactly.
Yep, that was
but
part of the emotional breakdown.
That.
Yeah.
My dad,
so
he used to call me Ghetto instead of calling me, that. His nickname for me was Ghetto, and my dad hated it. And he was like, you know he's belittling you, right? And I didn't care because it was like I never had a nickname before.
Wow.
It's like, it's cute. And my dad was like, no, baby. No, he is belittling you, and even to this day, he will not call me Erica. He calls me Ghetto, and I tell him, you know, that's not my name. He's you ghetto. He will never call me by my name.
Wow. That's really something.
Jeez. So
that
what was
really
his relationship
something.
Like with his mom, Erica? I'm
with him
to,
and his mom,
you know,
or me and his mom?
Yes, him and his mom.
He treated his mom like a queen. He does everything for his mom. Even, like, he held his mom's hand when she died. She died of cancer. He lost both of his parents to cancer. And he held his mom's hand when she died. Like, he treated her like a queen. Everything that she needed, she got. And she loved me, and I loved her. We didn't have it.
Did she know he was abusing you? Did the mom know that?
No, I didn't tell anybody. No. I didn't tell anybody. That's why I was saying, like, because how he was with his family, I used to wish I had cameras in my house because, well, there was one time that I told my godmom, and she went and said that I was the one basically causing it. And it wasn't until she realized, she saw him, how she saw him in action, that she called and apologized. She said, I really thought it was you. She said, I couldn't see that in him. Because how he was with everybody else, you wouldn't have never thought that he was that way with me.
Dr. Jekyll and Mr.
Hyde.
Man,
listen. That's usually how it is. I think that's like
the way I feel about my godchildren. Lord have mercy. Unique can
but
tell
I
you because her three are my godchildren. Child, please. And you know something, Erica? That's what makes it sometimes difficult as well. Because it's like, who's going to believe me? You know what I mean? And then on top, not only who's going to believe me, but not only did you not believe me, but you said it was my fault. And what anybody, I just want to say this to anyone who's being abused out there. Don't let anybody tell you that it's your fault. The whole it's your fault thing can really keep you trapped. And a lot of times the abuser tells you, oh, I did this because you, blah, blah, blah. Or, you know what I mean? So, wow.
You know what
wow.
they usually do? They usually turn it back on you. They usually tell you. They are so good. They are so good that they make you second guess and be like, did that happen? Did I cause that? Or, you know, it literally makes you say, wait a minute. And he'll say, I didn't do that. I only did this. Or I didn't say that. You said this. And then it's like, did that happen? Like, they're that good of making it feel like that it's you that is responsible, you know, for everything, every action that they do. You take it on. And you really believe that you are the cause of it and that you have to be the one to change it. And that if you don't change, that the situation won't get better. But there's nothing. There is absolutely nothing. And I hope whoever's listening, there is nothing that you will be able to do to fix him or her. You can't change them. And it is not your fault. That's what they do. They tell you that it's your fault, but it's not your fault. And you can't change it, and you can't fix it. There's nothing that you'll be able to do to change it or fix it. Nothing.
Not a darn thing. Well, Erica, we want to take a few seconds. We wanted to play a song by Pink, Family Portrait.
Okay.
And we just want you to just hold tight, and we're going to come right back.
Okay.
Please stop crying. I can't stand the sound. Your pain.
that that's, you know, the perspective from the children's side. Because kids, they love their mom and they love their dad. And they, you know, just want them to work it out and make it better. And sometimes it just gets to the point to where there's no fixing it.
They ask for it. They would ask all the time.
And start blaming themselves. Like, you know, maybe it's something that we did. Maybe if we behave more, you know, daddy won't be mad at mommy. So it's just a lot. Can I ask you, did you ever get counseling for your children?
Sorry, did I get what now? Counseling? No. I talked to them myself. When we went through the divorce counseling, in the state of Tennessee, you have to go to a class before the divorce is final. And they basically told us to talk to them together. He didn't want to, but I did. And I sat down and I asked them if they felt like any of it was their fault. They all said no. But again, like they were really young. My oldest were the only ones that we were really worried about because I had a newborn and a three-year-old who barely remember. My three-year-old swears up and down she can remember the days that, you know, I basically kicked your dad out that morning of the fight. She was sitting on the bed. She said she can remember. I don't know. But the oldest two remember it vividly.
I would suggest trying to give them some counseling because it may be so much that they'll say to you just because they want to protect your feelings, you know.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's something that's traumatic and you don't want it to bother them 10 years down the road. Just those pictures, those memories.
And I talked to them, and that's kind of what took me so long to share my story because I was worried about how it would affect them. And so before I even agreed to do the book, before I agreed to do my first interview, I sat them down and I asked them, you know, how do y'all feel about this? And with them being teenagers now, it's okay. They said, we know, you know, that this is what you've dealt with. We see, you know, how you are now.
He is,
and
how
he is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh.
And he likes
that.
What they may need counseling for is how he talks to them. That might be what they need counseling for because he's very rude to them. When he talks to them, he's rude to them. And like my oldest son is very good at basketball. Very good at sports, period. But he has not been to one game. Not one game of my oldest son. Sometimes I think that he may be jealous of him. He told my son, there's a post on my Instagram too that I had made because he texted me and told me that I was teaching my kids unrealistic things because my son has a dream of going to the NBA. His first dream is to get a scholarship to college,
to
be a lawyer. They said, he wants to go to the NBA. So he told my son, you need to take these classes at Lowe's and focus on construction. He said, your mama is teaching you unrealistic things. So he texted me and told me to stop lying to him, making him think that he could go to the NBA. And he said that I had signed my son up for like all kind of camps because he has colleges asking about him already and he's a sophomore. So I let him go to a couple of camps over the summer, and he was like, you wasting money on that because basically he told my son that he wasn't going to make it to the NBA because it's like one in a million chance or something like that, and that he shouldn't be making me waste money. Right. He said that his uncle, his daddy and his uncles were laughing at him when he told him he was going to the college camp. He said they were laughing at him. But what he told me the other day, I asked him, I said, are you okay, you know, not having a male figure in your life? Because he goes outside every day and he practices, he does his drills. He doesn't have anyone there, you know, to be that man to say, hey, let's go play basketball. Let me show you what you're doing wrong, other than his coaches with his coaches. But I asked him, I said, are you okay, you know, because I don't know how to teach you this stuff. He said, Mom, said Kevin Durant didn't have a positive male figure in his life.
That's
he
right.
Said, same situation.
That's right.
He said Kevin Durant's
LeBron
mom raised four kids by herself. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He said, it's going to be the same situation, mama. He said, I'm okay. He said, I don't need him. He said, if anything, mom, he said, he is teaching me. He's teaching me how not to be.
Not to be. Amen.
Yeah.
Well, thank God for that. You know, thank God for that mindset. But, you know, my mom is actually listening. She's here 90% of the time when we have our shows. And, you know, I know that if I open a line, you know, this would be reminiscent of her life because, you know, my step-grandfather was an abuser, you know, and I didn't get to meet him. He died before I was born. But he was definitely an abuser. And what I want to say is that sometimes I feel like what people don't realize, because my grandmother, I have to laugh, God bless my grandmother, because my grandmother was not one of those women who you could just do anything to. So even though he was aggressive and he was more strong than she was fighting, you know. But at the end of the day, whether she fought or not, every time that situation happened, it was still an abusive
right.
domestic violence relationship. You know, and my mother, you know, would tell me how, you know, she would have to, you know, get up and run out of the house to try to get help in her pajamas. You know, and that's no way for a child to live. So she always attributed, you know, the fact that she felt like she didn't do as great as she could have in school because she was a nervous wreck. You know, it was just my mother and my grandmother. My mother didn't have, you know, other siblings outside of my step-grandfather's siblings who they didn't live in a home. It was just the three of them, you know. And my grandmother worked hard, and she had really nice things. They had color TV when nobody had a color TV, you know, or TV at all, you know, that sort of thing. And, you know, he would mess those things up and just, you know, all kinds of things, you know, till it got to a point where when she got to be in high school, she threatened his life and said if he ever did anything else to her mother again, she was going to kill him, you know. And so sometimes in those dynamics, you know, if we're not strong enough to leave, we, not on purpose, but we put our children in positions where, guess what,
mm-hmm.
if they react, now they're going to jail. So
not only that, there's a kid the other day, that 8-year-old, wasn't it, an 8-year-old defending his mom and his baby sister and ended up getting
killed them. Yep, he killed the little boy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so, like, I thank God that I got, you know, when I saw that it triggered me to say, you know, so enough is enough. My babies mean everything to me. They're not babies anymore, and they still mean everything to me. You know, and
right.
I just didn't want them in that type of situation. I, if it wasn't for the police officer telling me that if I didn't let him see his kids, that I could go to jail for every contempt, and I would get 10 days for each contempt, he wouldn't have gotten them on the weekends that he was supposed to get them. Because I tried, you know, to even stop that, but the police officers told me that I couldn't because of the court factor. But
wow.
I didn't even want them, you know, around. Like, there were times when they would come home and say, Daddy didn't let us take a bath, or we got a whooping because we wanted to take a bath, or we
did
got a whooping
report
because
that?
He said we didn't like his girlfriend. Oh, yeah, I would tell them. But because I'm not on assistance, basically, I have to get a lawyer. In the state of Tennessee, you have to get a lawyer to go back to court if you're not on assistance. Because I don't get food stamps or tin care or anything like that. They never took any of my accusations. Because my child support, the paperwork was done through divorce, and it wasn't done through the state. So they didn't have any interest in it, is what they say. There was no interest in it. So I had to get a lawyer to go back to court, and I couldn't afford one. And now he barely gets them now. You know, they every now and then they see him on the weekends, and they'll talk to him on the phone. But if he doesn't pick them up, he doesn't get them, and that's just that on that. So we like it the way it is now, but then it was I was going through hell. It was every other weekend I was going through hell.
Right. Wow. So now, Erica, I would like for you to, because you're a motivational speaker, as am I, and I would like for you to share, you know, how that whole thing came about and the whole being that woman. So can you just, you know, share that with us?
Yes. Like I said, I was a PK kid, so I've always spoke in church. Before my dad passed away, I would give a lot of the sermons in church, and so I knew I had the gift of speaking, but I kind of just didn't want to be like an evangelist or anything like that. So I shied away from the church for a while after my dad passed away. I was angry at God because my dad was my best friend, and I felt like he just, the way that he died so suddenly. I was just angry. This year is when I decided enough was enough, and I needed to walk into my calling. Something happened to me in January that almost took me out of here. On top of dealing with the things that were going on with the kid's dad every other weekend. Even like I said, the abuse didn't stop just because we got divorced. I was getting text messages of, you're a stupid bitch, you this, you miserable, don't nobody want you, you mad because you don't, blah, blah. You know, even just the mental abuse was still going on. And I had had enough of just everything in my life. And I was sitting on my stairs, and I told God, I said, you're either going to have to go on ahead and take me, or you're going to have to tell me why I'm going through this. I can't take anymore. I don't want to do this no more. And that's when Be That Woman came to me. And it sounds crazy for me to say that I heard it clear as day, but I heard it clear as day. And I picked up my phone.
Girl,
it
don't sound crazy. God talks to people.
I literally was crying in my room one night. I said, I feel like I'm losing my mind because I'm sitting here talking to you. Like, literally can, you know, have a conversation. And I was like, this just doesn't. But that, needless to say, I heard Be That Woman. And I picked up my phone and started looking for books about strength in women. And I came across a book called Girl Code by Carla Alwa-Leiva. I don't know. Have you guys heard of that book?
I haven't.
It's a book about empowerment. She talks about, you know, having positive thoughts. And that's when I really realized that my mind was negative. I had been living in the past because of the abuse. I had just been living there and not really paying attention to my life and what was going on in my life. It hadn't even dawned on me that I had gotten my bachelor's and my master's degree as a single mom in the midst of all of that. It hadn't even dawned on me that I had bought and built a big, beautiful house by myself with no help from a man in the midst of all of that. So, like, I couldn't even be grateful for what was going on in the now because my mind was constantly beating myself up. And what I would do is when I would get mentally abused by him, it's almost like cutting. I would start telling myself that I deserved it. I'm not worth it. I deserved it. What he's saying has to be true because he keeps saying it. It's almost like, you know, when someone has the cutting disease where they cut themselves to get rid of, to deflect the pain, that was my mechanism. I would beat myself up on the inside to deal with it and say that it's true. It has to be true. And that's where my mind lives. And when I read Carla Alwa-Leiva's book about negative thoughts, the first time that I realized that my thoughts actually really mattered and that they didn't have to, my mind was not created to remember. My mind was created to create life. And that was the first time that I decided that that's what I was going to do. So I started blogging about my journey. The blog was just really, you know, for me to talk about how I was transitioning from being that woman into this woman. And it just evolved from there. I actually gave a speech probably about 3 weeks ago at one of my own events. And that's when, I really got the true meaning of what Be That Woman is. The name of God is I Am That I Am. And the that in there is, what is God, to you at that given time? He can be that for you. And so what my message is that God gave me to give to women is to be who God created you to be. Be that woman. And only you know who that woman is. No, your mom can't tell you who that woman is. Your pastor can't tell you who that woman is. No one can tell you who God created you to be but God. Now, that can be confirmations, but that confirmation, the only way it's a confirmation is if God has already told it to you. And that's what God gave me for being that woman. Who I am the purpose pusher. I push people into their purpose. I motivate people and remind them who God created them to be. And that's who he told me to be. Be that woman. And that's where it all came from.
I love it.
Wow. So in terms of, because, there's so many people dealing with domestic violence and going through exactly what it is that you experience. Outside of course, being the woman that they need to be for themselves and only God, that person and God knows, what experience would you give to a person who feels like they can't get out?
I would say the only way you're going to get out is you have to get help to get out. You have to tell somebody what's going on. You're not going to get out on your own. You have to tell somebody what's going on so that you can have a support system to make sure you get out and stay out. Because there, even after I put him out, I tried to let him come back. If you don't open up about it and have somebody there to remind you that you don't deserve that, then you won't get out. So I would say to have open up about it and have a support system. That's the only way you're going to get out. Because you're not going to be able to do it on your own. And a lot of prayer. A lot of prayer. But sometimes when you pray, when you're in that situation and you're praying, sometimes prayer is just not. You have to have that support system. You have to tell somebody what's going on. Even if you don't want to tell the whole world, tell one person what's going on, so that one person can help keep you out of that situation or remind you, because you're going to try to go back.
So let me look up this, because I know that oftentimes in abusive situations, there's the whole thing of being alienated from your own family, from people who love you. So I'm guessing that, judging by what you just said, it would be difficult for a person to say, okay, let me go back and reach out to this person. She's my best friend. Or, this one is my favorite cousin, when they've been alienated from those people. What kind of, approach do you think they should take? I'm sorry?
They're usually alienated from the people that are closer to them, that the abuser feels like is a threat to their control. Yeah, and so what you're asking is, you're saying that basically the person can only reach out to like a mom or a cousin or a best friend. 9 times out of 10, they still, if they are really trying to get out, they'll still call them, and that person will still be there. That person will still be there for them.
Right, and that's exactly what I needed for you to say, because I feel like I've never been in an abusive relationship to where someone was beating me up or anything. So it's easy for me to say, oh, that person will still be there for you. They'd be looking at me like, well, you never been through it. But I just felt like if someone had gone through that, they need to hear that from you. They need to hear from a person who's already been in that situation. That guess what? Don't be afraid to reach out. So that's why I asked you to say it. I could say it all day. Don't mean nothing to them if Mecca says it, if Mecca ain't never been beat up. You know, so.
Right.
Wow. Whew. This is heavy. Wow.
So let me ask
thank you so much.
So what, did you feel like he would change? Or
I felt like my love. I felt like if I loved him, I felt like I had so much love in me and that I was really this good woman. And that if only he could see how good of a woman that I was, that he would change, that my love would change him, is what I thought.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's where so many people make the mistake. We have to accept people who they are and believe them. The first time that we see any symptoms of anything, we got to believe that that's who they really are.
Wow.
Yep, and then that whole thing about you think you better than us. I was thinking, oh, my God, I saw everything that he would do. Like, if my sister's life got cut out, he would pay my sister's light bill. If my dad needed money, my dad got money. Like, he was there for everybody. And I kept thinking, oh, he has such a good heart, and he deserves it. He deserves that. And if only he, you know, I just keep loving him. I would beg. I would call him, like, while he was at work. And then I could remember, oh, my God, one time, like, we had a barbershop. And you know, this I went up there and I told him that I needed some money to get, you know, from me and the kids. Now, the kids had already been telling me that there was a woman sitting on daddy's lap, you know, at the barbershop. They would go after school and go to the barbershop, and they would come home and say, there's a woman sitting on daddy's lap playing with daddy's tattoos. And, of course, he would say the kids were lying. And one time I went up there to get money and said, you know, hey, and the kids need something to eat. And he told me, get it how you live.
What?
Yeah, get it how you live. And I didn't know that the girl was sitting in that barbershop. I didn't.
Oh,
you know,
so that's why he couldn't.
Yeah. He had to act like.
Because he was putting it on for her.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then he told me, after the whole split up, he had the truck, our expedition, and I told him, I said, hey, I need the expedition. I'm taking the kids to Six Flags. I wanted to do something for the kids because our family had just split up. So I'm taking the kids to Six Flags. And he said, no, you can't drive my truck. He said, my girlfriend will get mad if she see you in my truck.
Oh.
Yeah. And then,
oh, wow.
Yeah. And that's friend. He was like, yeah. He said, we've been together. I just didn't want to tell you because you said that. You said to never tell you anything like that because you said it would kill you. And I told him, I said, no, what I told you was, if you ever going to cheat on me, is leave before you do it. And he was like, well, I got a girlfriend. And I said, well, the divorce isn't final for 90 days. He said, I don't want your ass. And then he hung up.
Hmm.
And then I found out during my my baby boy, he had surgery at 2 years old. He was like one and a half, not two, or almost one. But we were at Vanderbilt, and we were in the cafeteria, and that's how I found out that she was actually getting ready to have a baby. He told me in the cafeteria while my son was in surgery. He was like, I got to tell you something. He calls her Ladybug, said Ladybug's pregnant.
Oh, so you ghetto, but she Ladybug.
Yeah, exactly. See? Yeah. Yeah, he calls her Ladybug, and I'm ghetto.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. And it's like you have to say to yourself, my, what is it, three or four kids? My beautiful kids came out of
that.
Four kids.
Yep.
Wow.
That's what I say all the time. I say that all the time. I look at them and I say, well, God, I thank you. Today, you know, I write down my things that I'm grateful for when I'm sometimes when I'm feeling like, okay, what's going to happen here? You know, I get out a piece of paper and I just start writing down my things that I'm grateful for. And it always makes me feel better because you don't, that's how I stay the now, you know? And I was writing it down like, I thank God for these four. Even though they came out of that, I thank God, you know, for these four.
Look, and those four was what got you out of that.
Yep, exactly.
Oh, my goodness. I thank you so much, Erica, for sharing your story with us. I hope somebody that was listening. I hope someone that was listening, you gave them the courage to leave. You know, some people think, you know, I have to stay for the children's sake. I don't want my family to be broken up. I don't want my kids to have a stepmother or a stepfather or, you know, it's not healthy for the kids to see that. Neither. It's not.
I think the cheapest reason, if I could say anything to anybody that's listening, if you're in an abusive relationship, two things. Abuse is abuse. If he's not beating the crap out of you, if he's downing you, making you feel less than who you are, that's abuse.
Yeah.
Don't let anybody tell you that you're not being abused just because he hasn't hit you yet. And eventually he most likely will if the abuse is starting with verbal in the beginning. So abuse is abuse. Get away. At the first sign of it, no man should talk down to you. Nobody should talk down to you. Abuse is abuse. And then the second thing that I can say is most women are afraid of what people will think about them if they speak up, if they tell somebody that they're being abused. They're afraid of being judged by their community. They're afraid of being judged by their family, church members, really. You know, that was my big thing. I was afraid of being judged by the church, you know. So don't let other people's opinions be the reason why you stay. And your children, if you're thinking about your children and you're saying you want to stay because you don't want your household to be broken, care more about your children's life and their future than you do care about being in that household and that unhealthy environment. If you really are saying that the reason why you're saying it's for your children, leave for your children. That's the biggest thing that I can say.
I love it. Thank you so much, Erica. And I want you to also let all the listeners know where they can follow you on Instagram, Facebook.
Instagram at b.inthatwoman. And then Facebook.
Do you have two pages?
I have a Facebook.
Do you have two
I have one page. No, it's just B. It's B in that woman, but I had to put the period there. So it's B dot in that woman. Yeah. And then I have a Facebook page. The Facebook page is just B that woman.
Okay.
And then I do a lot of videos on my personal page, which is it's Erica Harvell or Ankia Harvell, which is my middle name.
And I love the way you spell your Erica.
Thank you. My mom has
beautiful.
I wish I didn't like it growing up, because I used to call me Rika.
Oh,
yeah,
Rika.
I love it. Yeah. But I love it.
And you got to let us know it's out or when it's coming out.
It should be coming out by January. We'll start promoting the book in November. I'm actually doing the finishing touches. It's going to the editor. It has to go to her by this weekend. So we'll start promoting it in November. Oh, and I have a blog. The blog is bethatwoman.net. Oh, one more thing. Can I say this? I'm sorry.
Of course.
An app that I just launched. My app
let me write
is called
down.
Know That.
Know That. And tell us about the app.
It's somewhat like a Yelp, except we do video reviews instead of the written reviews. I feel like, you know how you have the Facebook recommendations where people say, hey, I need a recommendation for a restaurant or a barber or a daycare, and you get swamped with like 89 recommendations. This gives you that word-of-mouth recommendation through video review instead of just the regular written review. That way you can trust the information that you're getting. But right now we launched in Nashville, and then we have 13 other cities in the app, Atlanta, Cleveland.
I'm in Atlanta.
What is it? Okay. We have Texas, Las Vegas, San Diego, Miami. I can't think of them all, but it's a total of 15 cities in the app, and we'll be adding more as we grow. But we launched in July. It's actually my company, and then I have a co-founder, a male co-founder. And we hit Google's top 27 for nearby search a couple of weeks ago. So I'm really excited about that and being an entrepreneur and a tech startup. So,
I'm
going to definitely check it out. That's awesome.
Thank you.
I want to ask you one last thing before we close.
Okay.
So I know that was your past. Are you one of those women that don't believe in love again? Will you give love a try again?
I am a little afraid of men, I have to say, because I did go into another relationship that wasn't, because I didn't allow myself to heal. I didn't allow myself to get to know who I was, so I kind of allowed myself to be in a situation that wasn't good for me. Now, he wasn't abusive. He wasn't, he just wasn't attentive, you know. It wasn't good for me. So I am a little afraid of men because I don't know how to trust again yet. So, but I do want to get married again one day.
Yeah. Well, all right. And I want to get married one day. Wow.
But I believe God is Erica, that person.
I know, that's right. I've been waiting. But thank you so much, Erica, for sharing your story.
Okay.
You know, just like
You're
I told
welcome.
You last week, you know, because if you think about it, when I first reached out to you and I DM'd you, I was like, oh, you know, she just seems so like-minded. I think we need to stay connected. So now I have to definitely extend that and say, yes, we definitely need to, you know, stay connected. I love your positive energy and, you know, just be there for each other to feed off of each other's positive energy, you know, and tell each other, go ahead, girl, you can keep on going. You know, you can keep it moving, you know, because you got a lot of things going on. And sometimes, you know, you just need that extra push. You know, we're here. You have my number now. You can reach out to me, DM me, you know, whatever it is. And, you know, we just continue to push each other because I do believe that, you know, myself, you, and Unique as well are here. One of our purposes is to motivate people. So if we don't do anything else together, I do believe that we will do that. So thank you so
Absolutely.
Much again. If there's anything that you would like to say in your closing, right now would be the awesome time to do so.
I just want to say that I thank you for having me here. I thank you for doing this for women. I'm all about women helping women, and I think it's time for us to open up, step into our power, be who God created us to be. We are an extension of the man. Men get mad at me when I say that we're an upgrade, but I don't say that to belittle them. You know, we were created second. We have, you know, certain gifts and talents that the man doesn't have, which means that we are an attachment to it. And I just thank God that, you know, you guys are allowing him to use you to remind women of who we are and to remind us to step into that power. And I'm going to tell my followers to listen to this show because, I mean, you guys are talking about real topics, you know, to helps the woman remember who she is. So I just want to say thank you.
Oh, wow. Aww. Thank you. What an encouragement.
Thank you. And when that book
That's
is getting ready to come out, you're more than welcome to come back. Or whenever
thank
it is
you.
That you're going to do something.
Thank you. I would
well,
love
all righty.
Wait,
well,
Mecca,
we thank you so
before
much.
You do that,
yes.
Before you do that, Mecca, you have to share the wash the face and the hands. Go ahead.
Oh, my God. That's your aunt. Like, come on. So every week she has me to tell our guests something that my mom always says, which is, you know, that one hand washes the other and they both wash the face. So in other words, you know, let's just continue to be there for each other. And we have been blessed because 99.9% of the time that we have our guests on our show, we don't mind saying that at the end. You know, we don't mind saying, you know, stay in contact. So that's a blessing.
Yes.
So, yes, one hand washes the other, and they both wash the face. And, Unique, you're saying it next week.
You know I'm going to mess it up, right?
That's all right. That's all right. She won't mind. All right, so everyone, thank you so much for joining the VIP. Before we close, we are just going to play one more song by Janet Jackson, and that is What About?
We walked across the beach. What a moment.
you for spending time on the VIP with Unique Emeka. You can find us here every Thursday night at 7:30 p.m. for the VIP experience. Bring a friend or look us up on Instagram and Facebook under Unique Emeka, spelled YOUNEIKMEKHA, or on Twitter under VIP.UniqueEmeka. And if you don't believe anything else, please believe that you are a VIP through trial and triumph. Thanks again for joining us.